This is Local Motion, KVNF's weekly public affairs show. I'm your host this week, Brody Wilson. Today we have a special two-part episode for you. First, we're going to hear from Randall Palmer of Technical College of the Rockies. That's the school just south of Delta. And if you think you know what a technical college is, I assure you, you will be surprised by what's happening at the Technical College of the Rockies. I hope you'll stay tuned. And for the second half of our episode, we'll hear from KVNF's freelance reporter, Laura Palmisano. And she brings us a discussion that she had with Bob Downs, a physician's assistant who is just completing a tour in the Ukraine. That's all this week on Local Motion. We hope you'll stay tuned. Randall Palmer of the Technical College of the Rockies, thanks so much for joining us in Studio M to talk with KVNF. Could we start, just tell us who you are, what do you do?
Oh, well, I appreciate the opportunity. It's always great to have a situation where we can highlight what we do at the Tech College of the Rockies. So I'm the executive director. I had an opportunity to take on that after spending about 14 years in Delta County Public School System. And the situation from that was, it was just time for me to try to reach out and find a culminating experience after being in industry for a while and then coming into the principalship. It allowed me this situation to be executive director of a wonderful college that really prepares students for high need, meaningful experiences here on the Western Slope. Well, that way the students don't have to leave in order to go get some kind of credentialing. They can stay here because what we try to do is maintain that relevance of what is it that the industry needs, and we figure out what that means, and then we backfill that with some highly trained individuals to put those students who desire to work in the fields that are available here.
Tell me a little bit about your background with Delta County Public Schools, and is there a connection between public schools and Technical College?
Yeah, great situation there. We are an area technical college. There's only three in Colorado, and the other two are located in Denver. This one, because of state statute, we have to be underneath the guidance of a public school system.
Huh. And that is Delta County Schools.
That's Delta County Schools.
And it sounds like you really have spent your career in Delta County Schools. Say just a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so I started out at Delta Middle School as an assistant principal, and then had the opportunity to move to Paonia Junior Senior High School. Was there for about 10 years, and then worked with a consolidation between Paonia High School, Hotchkiss High School, to become North Fork High School. And then after that, moved into the situation I'm in now at the Tech College.
Help our listeners understand just the basics of what Technical College of the Rockies is. What kinds of classes are students taking there? Who are your students? How many?
Great. Yeah, so we are a short-term credential. So what that means is that we don't offer any degrees. We focus in on what it is that the community needs and then fashion whatever the credentialed opportunity for them to receive such. There'll be some kind of industry credential. And I'll list a few of those. Allied Health, for example, we have CNAs, we have patient care tech, we also have medical assistants. And then recently we just launched our surgery tech program that's been in existence for the last year, and we're about to finish up the first cohort of our diagnostic medical sonography, which, as most people understand, is ultrasound. Then you move around the campus and you start getting into the Law Academy, which we offer the full situation there, automotive, and then cosmetology. And with cosmetology, you have barbering, you have esthetician, and you go into nails, and then all the way through a new one that we also just launched is cyber technology. So all of those are short-term credentials, anywhere from about 6 months to 2 years. We don't have any support from the standpoint of loans or something like that. So our students are going to graduate debt-free.
I love that. Is there, when I think of technical colleges, I often think of the technical trades of sheet metal and electrician and plumber, et cetera. Any of those at Technical College?
You know, that's a great question. When you look at construction, the construction industry doesn't necessarily need a certification. Where we focus on are those short-term credentials that do require certification. So it's some kind of industry award that a student's going to have to take a test for and then demonstrate understanding. So they're going to show proficiency in the lab, which almost everything we do is all hands-on. So it's kind of difficult to say that, well, because of technology, we have, you know, a video situation where you watch the video, you plug it into your computer, and then out comes an award. I mean, for example, how in the world could you learn phlebotomy and you've never touched an arm? I mean, how in the world do you understand, you know, how to pass audio and you've never manipulated brakes? You right. don't understand how the brake caliper works. You don't understand how to torque the lug nuts. So everything has to be demonstrated for your knowledge of the application.
So are there any of these certification level items around, I don't know, welding or plumbing or electrician in any of those trades? Are they, do you have them?
Yeah, we do have welding. It's an industry education piece. It's not a true program for us.
Okay.
Because we found most of our students, they don't want to understand the metallurgy behind it. They just want to weld. Like, I just want to figure out how to do this. So we do offer that, and it's at night.
Give me a sense of the size of school. How many students do you have? How many courses do you offer?
Well, we're at 20 programs right now.
Okay.
We've added 5 more relevant programs in the last year. We've increased our capacity from when I first started there about 4 years ago. The last 3 years, our enrollment's up 30%.
Wow.
And then in the last, we'll just say the last 2 falls, so we just finished our fall semester, we're up over 45%.
Wow, congratulations.
Yeah, so our capacity, we're at capacity. That's the trick. We've got to figure out ways in order to offer programming that still meets the needs without flooding the industry. But at the same time, we have to expand. So that's why we're almost at 7 days a week, quite frankly. Wow. Morning, afternoon, evenings, all the way through Saturday.
I'm curious, let's look forward.
Okay.
What are you excited about with Technical College of the Rockies? Where would you like to see it, in 3 to 5 years? Are you humming along just like you'd like to, and this is great? Or are there evolutions that you're excited about seeing in the coming years?
Well, I think you could see, you know, from the executive order that's been signed by the president and our current governor, is that short-term credentials are meaningful. We need to put people to work.
Yeah.
And we need to put people to work now. So when you're looking at the credentials that we offer, it's not so much all of the fine arts or the things that would supplement a 2-year degree. That's sorted out. And so in so doing, we want to ensure that we meet that demand of what we're seeing nationwide and statewide, that we're behind. I mean, we're behind in many of those industries that we offer. And the trick is that we also have to figure out ways to expand our programming so that we can continue to gain more students as the need is really going unfulfilled.
You know, I really, I pictured this as a school for residents of the Uncompahgre Valley, but that might not be accurate. Are you give me the sense of the umbrella from which you're attracting students?
Well, quite frankly, we're attracting even from out of state. With our ultrasound program, we're already receiving applications from Wyoming, from Utah, from New Mexico. With our law academy, there are some from the Front Range. We also have them just Amir going through the Western Slope, all the way from Durango to Craig. So I think the piece is if you're offering something that is needed and desirable and it's giving a high wage, then those students will come.
I love that. I'd come to this conversation picturing a technical college as some kind of an alternative to higher ed. And I'm picturing people, graduating high school in the area and kind of thinking about, do I want to go to college or not? But what I'm hearing from you is it's really, you fill a different niche. You teach people skills for jobs that are in, that desire labor in our communities.
Right.
And it seems like as a relatively small institution, you've got to be somewhat dynamic to the changing labor needs of our region, and you do this through partnerships with major employers. And it's much more about skilling up citizens to be able to meet needs in industry. Is this Is this fair, or do you think of yourselves as a parallel alternate to higher ed?
No, I don't know that it's really an alternative. I think it's about what the student desires. So if you look at it, I want to be this. What does it take for me to receive some form of credentialing that's going to allow me to apply for a job that way?
Yeah.
I said, okay, here's what you need. Here's how you get there. We provide the path for you. But it's not just major employers. When you look on the Western Slope, we have a ton of, I don't mean minor employers, but they're small companies. So instead of looking on the Front Range where you would have some of our sister area technical colleges that have partnerships with Floyd's Barbershop for cosmetology or for Ralph Schomp or some of those larger or unions, we don't have that over here. But yet we still have the same need. And that need shouldn't be because we live in this zip code that you get less than. I mean, our zip code doesn't mean that we are not as, and you fill in the blank, it's just we desire to live here. So if we desire to live here, why not take these hidden Edisons that are in our schools and put them in a situation where they can not only survive, but they contribute positively to the community, which continues to help our communities thrive. That's the essence of who we are and what we're about.
There's been a lot of press recently about artificial intelligence and its potential to replace, I'm forgetting the words, intellectual jobs, jobs that, are people sitting behind computer screens, coordinating or using their brains to get work done. And you describe at your school that everything, essentially almost everything, is hands-on. Do you think about or talk with your students about the importance of the skills or how their skills may or may not insulate them from a coming AI change in workforce?
That's a great question. We receive that one quite a lot. And the rationale behind it is that we embrace AI. I mean, because the students are going to be using that technology in whatever industry they choose to be a part of. So when you think about it, I don't see AI replacing anything that we offer because we are service oriented. I don't see, and we'll just continue with that line of thinking, I don't see AI replacing phlebotomists. I don't see AI replacing auto technicians. I don't see it replacing ultrasound technologists. But what I do see is the ability for our students to utilize that technology to enhance their training and then be able to apply that. So if you understand the techniques and you have this AI concept, why not merge the two? So you have theory and practice, you combine them together and you have praxis. So now those students are not only equipped, but they're very cognizant of what it is that they offer. So we embrace AI and we try to do it in such a way that it makes it applicable to whatever industry that we're training them in.
Randall, anything else that you haven't gotten to say that you'd like to make sure that KBNF listeners know about Technical College of the Rockies?
No, I appreciate the opportunity to highlight, but we have a gym here. It's a sleeping giant right in our backyard. I mean, students no longer have to go away, and when they do, they usually tend to stay. But now they can, we'll just look at CyberTech. You can open your window, look over Mount Lamborn, and still provide some kind of service for somewhere else outside of the state just because of that technology. Why not stay here, keep the money here, keep your family here, and then root in who we are as Western Slopers?
One last question, this will fit earlier in the interview, but what's the financial connection between Technical College of the Rockies and the school district? How are you funded?
We are state funded, so we're on the long bill. That means that any one of the institutions of higher education receive funding from the state, and then we supplement that through tuition. And here's something that's pretty meaningful, is our return on investment, according to Georgetown University's, we are in the top two of the 63 institutions of higher education for return on investment in the state. That right there is indicative of the quality that we provide matching with what it costs versus what you will receive over the next 10 years. That's a meaningful statistic.
Tell me about the timing of your students. Who are your students? Are these adults, middle career people pivoting to a new career, or are these young kids?
It's actually a wide gamut, but you can start as early as a junior in high school. I mean, you go through the junior piece, you matriculate through your senior. or start as a senior and you go into our post-secondary. But the trick is you technically, if you could walk across the stage and receive your diploma, you can turn right around and get your industry certification and get right to work. You're immediately assimilated into the workforce.
That's great. And how about for older folks?
Same thing. And that's why we're not known as, we'll say, like, you know, I was Principal Palmer at some point, or, you know, a director or president, as you know, at some universities. We're peers. I mean, and the reason you're peers is because you think again about surgical technology. At some point, I'm going to be vulnerable, so I'm Randall to them because some of them are my age. But at the juncture where they become providing that service in surgical technology, then they need to understand, and I need to understand, that we are in this together. It is a community. I need everybody winning. I need everybody graduating, because you're all going to ride in the ambulance at some point. You're all going to receive services to look better, to feel better. And we all need brakes in order to stop our vehicles. So when you start thinking about it, it's a true symbiotic relationship between us and the community.
As I know I said this, I'm repeating myself, but I love this idea that the skills that your students are learning are parts of, like, the bricks in our foundation of our local society. Mm-hmm. That the ambulance tech that's taking care of you on your way to the ER may well have been trained.
Absolutely. Then you're going to see the CNA, you're going to see the medical assistant, you're going to see the surgery technology, you can receive your ultrasound. And the whole time, you probably just walked out of cosmetology and you feel good because you look like Brad Pitt.
Well, Randall, at KVNF, we talk a lot about community, the role of keeping our community informed helping our citizens understand what's happening in their community and what meetings they want to show up to make their voice heard and the like. And I'm so happy to get to talk with you today. It sounds like, you know, through your service in our public schools and now at Technical College of the Rockies, and just hearing your view, you care deeply about helping skilled people stay in this community and earn money and earn living wages and support. It's like you are the one of the earliest cogs in the machine of our local economy, and I think that's really cool.
It is.
And thank you for what you do.
Yeah, we appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Yeah, cheers.
You're listening to Local Motion, KVNF's weekly public affairs show. I'm your host, Brody Wilson. That was Randall Palmer from Technical College of the Rockies, South of Delta. And now for the second half of this episode, we are going to move all the way over to the other side of the globe, to the Ukraine, where we'll pick up with KVNF's Laura Palmisano. A physician's assistant from Colorado just completed his sixth medical mission in Ukraine. Bob Downs, who's from the tiny town of Lake City, volunteers with the nonprofit Global Care Force. He spoke with KVNF's Laura Palmisano over the phone from Ukraine after his final shift on the medical mission.
What part of Ukraine are you in right now?
Currently, I'm in Kyiv, the capital.
Is that where your medical mission work took place?
No, that's where all of our medical missions start. From there, we usually, at least on the last few trips, travel south to a community on the river called Mykolaiv. And then we usually go out into some of the smaller villages out to the east of there, which were, those areas were occupied for 7 to 9 months. The roads are in such bad shape that it's difficult for them to get any sort of medical care or get any prescriptions. And that's one of the interesting things about Global Care Force. They try on a 60-day basis to get back to some of the same villages. And when we come, not only do we come with medical providers, but we also come with the medications they're going to need as well.
We previously spoke in June after your fifth medical mission to Ukraine. What number are you on now?
Number 6, just completing that here in December.
Why did you decide to go back again?
I really like working with Global Care Force and the idea of the continuity, trying to get back on a 60-day basis. So that really attracted me right from the beginning. And I just felt like there was a need to go back again to kind of care for these folks. In fact, I got to see quite a few people this time that I had seen on my last trip in June.
And what changes have you seen over the past 6 months?
out in the rural areas in the south and southeast of the country, when we first started going to those areas, a lot of the fields were mined and there wasn't a lot planted because these are primarily agricultural areas. Over the last few trips, I've seen gradually where they've demined the fields and they've been planted again. In fact, when I was there in June, it was really quite beautiful. They had planted considerable crops, rapeseed as well as a lot of wheat. And that section of Ukraine is, well, it's pretty much the breadbasket of Europe, all of Ukraine for that matter.
How many times have you been to Ukraine this year?
February, and then again in April, and then June, and of course here in December. So this will be the fourth trip this year.
6 months is a long stretch. What have you seen change for your patients?
It's wintertime. They're bundled up. There's still not a lot of electricity down in that area. In fact, even in the larger city where we were staying down south in Mykolaiv, this time there were a lot more power outages. And of course, we didn't really trust the water that was coming through the tap if you could get water. So in that respect, things have been degraded a little bit more than they had previously. People are faring well. They're used to that, especially out in the villages. They're used to being in a little more austere environment. The thing I will say between June and now, it was nice to see some of the workers coming in where they're actually back to work in the fields. Because again, those are agricultural areas and that's basically their livelihood down there.
What are you hearing from folks about how they feel about the U.S.'s support of Ukraine?
I think there's a sense that perhaps relations with the U.S. government and Ukraine are a little strained right now. I get the impression that while people are very weary of the war, they're also not very anxious to settle the war on Russia's terms necessarily. They feel that there's a certain unfairness to that, especially considering how the war unfolded.
On the sixth trip to Ukraine, what is different from previous experiences?
What I find, even in Kyiv, they're rationing electricity. There are a lot of outages, although a lot of places were prepared for this. They have backup generators, that sort of thing. We've also been told for the first time on this particular trip not to trust the water. In other words, not to drink the water from the tap, although we could probably bathe in it, but be very cautious. I know that there's folks who are slightly more unnerved. They seem a little tireder because the air raid alerts that they get are much more frequent, which disrupts sleep and their daily pattern.
Were you near the front lines?
We were back a good little ways, but there was one village that we were probably within 20 kilometers of Kherson, where there is active fighting going on. I was doing a home visit in that village, and we could actually hear artillery in the distance.
How do you and your fellow medical providers stay safe?
Our team is involved in coordination through the Ukrainian health network, and we are connected with security forces so that we know what areas are very safe or are safe for us to go into on a given day.
Let's talk about the continuity of care you are providing through Global Care Force.
Well, most of the sort of medical ailments we're dealing with are things like type 2 diabetes, hypertension, cardiovascular disease, and a lot of arthritic complaints, as well as basically post-traumatic stress. People are having difficulty sleeping, they're feeling very stressed, and they're somewhat anxious. And then providing the medications for the patients until we can get back again is probably one of the biggest things, because you've got to remember, a lot of the roads were destroyed in these occupied areas. So even getting to a village that's, say, 20 kilometers outside of Mykolaiv can sometimes take an hour to an hour and a half. It's very slow going. And most of the folks is living in those villages, they don't have the money to have a car or be able to have the gas to actually go into the larger cities where they can get to a pharmacy. And right now, because the roads are in such bad shape, there is no public transportation to a lot of these rural villages.
You mentioned working at a refugee center. Where are these folks coming from?
This visit at the two refugee centers in Chikazi are folks that are recent arrivals from the front further east, where some of the fighting is going on, and they're fleeing that fighting. The government can put them up in these refugee centers to try and resettle them short term, and they provide them with a stipend. And we are there to provide them with initial medical care until they get themselves settled.
Have you treated refugees before?
Yes. each of the trips previously, except for the June trip, we had always traveled to some of the refugee centers in Chakazi as well as other regions in Ukraine. In June, we didn't go back to those refugee centers because at that time, there were not a lot of new people that had come and the government had provided a lot of subsidy for those folks. We rather spent our time out in the villages seeing folks that couldn't get into larger areas.
What is it like working at the refugee centers?
Many of them had only been there less than a week. Many of them weren't sure where they were going to get their medicines. They were very thrilled to see us. There was also a mix of folks we had seen in the past there as well that hadn't been resettled elsewhere. But generally speaking, they were really excited about the idea that we were there, we hadn't forgotten about them, and we were willing to take care of their basically general medical needs.
Are you planning another trip?
I am. I'm scheduled to go back in March, so I'll be traveling with a former team member who lives in Colorado also, and she's a behavioral trauma specialist, and we'll be traveling together on that trip. We won't be traveling, I understand, in January and February, which is very unusual for us because we do like to go back at least on a 60-day cycle. It's my understanding that there were some funding issues and also recruiting medical staff who would be willing to go back for those 2 months, as I understand it.
How do you raise the funds to go on these medical missions?
Usually through friends and folks that I know professionally. My wife will usually put a notation on Facebook that I'm going back as well. I have also a few very consistent larger donors that are very generous in helping me get back. This last trip, we were a little bit short, so my wife and I were able to put up the funds ourselves. We, of course, will be fundraising for the next trip for March. These missions typically are 13 to 15 days long. 2 weeks is about the amount of time that a working professional can probably get vacation time off to do a trip like this. And of course, it's difficult to get into the country. It involves a flight from the U.S. to somewhere in Europe and then into Krakow, Poland, and then about a 10-hour, 12-hour train ride into Kyiv. And then, of course, usually a travel day the next day from Kyiv. So it really takes about 3 days to get here and 3 days to get back to the United States.
Are you mainly seeing civilians?
We're not seeing, generally speaking, any veterans or anything like that unless they're no longer in the military. I mean, occasionally we will end up seeing a veteran, but generally speaking, these are just general citizens that need primary care issues addressed, like their diabetes and that sort of thing. Occasionally we will see a more acute problem, but it's something that is more happen chance and we happen to be there. We kind of take care of that as well.
Is there anything else you would like to add, Bob?
Yes. Working in the villages is very interesting because the environment's much more austere. There is rarely any electricity in any of the small clinics. In fact, this December, if there was any heat, it was usually from a wood stove that they had going prior to us going there. So it's a little more austere working in that environment as opposed to working in the refugee centers where things are a little more comfortable. And patients, when they come see us there, they don't have to travel any distance, most of them coming down from their room as opposed to the village folks that are having to travel in.
How many patients are you seeing in a day?
It varies. When we're in the villages, we try and do two villages a day, an AM village and then an afternoon village. And we're seeing anywhere from 30 to 50 patients in each village. And in the refugee center, it's almost a three-quarter full day when we're there. And we're seeing, an average of 60 to 70 patients.
Thank you for your time, Bob.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
That was physician's assistant Bob Downs in Ukraine, speaking with KBNF's Laura Palmisano. If you missed a portion of that conversation, you can always listen to the full conversation by looking for Local Motion under the News tab at kbnf.org. That's all we have time for today. Special thanks in this episode goes to KBNF's freelance reporter Laura Palmisano and her guest Bob Downs. And of course, Randall Palmer from Technical College of the Rockies. Thanks so much for tuning in to KBNF's Local Motion, our weekly public affairs show. We'll see you next time.